Blog Talk Radio.
The bloom, the swoon, the sugar's on your block. The planets let them flash in the corners of New York. The ghetto, the meadow, the Mr. Butterfly, the honey bugs dug and licked the honeybee. The sun, the kiss, the funk for a bit. The lips with the soul and some jazz for your hips. The puff, the buzz, the lids be heavy slick. The mecca get a rush when the beats be very thick. The hands, the feet, the brown baby treat. The femmes fumble loose and drink the doodle juice. The steps, the flams, the planets got damp. The people get a grip with the tape from a jam. A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. The big, the fat, the cool, cool cats. The psychedelic soul puts the planets on the map. The chic, the love, the far out name. The lack of the funk's the main, why we came. The boogie gets done, the colors won't run. The funk hits the square, the kids gotta come. The pizza with the pop, the West Fourth stop. The crew after crew that do the grasshop. The true cool is black, the new school is fat. The beats by the ounce, the funk by the pack. The groove is the fix, the jitterbug fix. The hanging off the butts with the fat soul kicks. That's my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
I said a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Oh, a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. The wide, the hip, dig it, it's the trip. The loops, the scene, and the funkifying it. The sounds, the pounds, the stacks, the flares. The baggy, baggy jeans, the naughty, naughty hair. The twinkle in the eye, the kisses living fly. The crew from the sky, the stuff to get you high. The action, the work for the rhyme. We goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot, the papers get got. The streets get the buzz, the funk off your block. The opium groove, the smacked out soul. The kicking it live, the fat gotta roll. With my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Yeah, it's a nickel bag of funk, a nick bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Nickel bag, a nickel bag. Ladybug will hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Butterfly hit you with a nickel bag, a nickel bag, a nickel bag. Doodlebug hit you with a nickel bag, a nickel bag, a nickel bag.
Hello and welcome to Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poet callers. I am Pam Ray, filling in for Jeremy F., and co-hosting with me tonight is Victoria Frost. Now, for those of you that don't know, Victoria is a very interesting woman. She actually, in 2012, climbed Mount Everest with a 150-pound tortoise named Ernest on her back.
This is true. You know, I warmed up with Mount Rainier in 2004. In that case,
yeah.
I only carried 3 dachshunds around each leg. But I felt that for Everest, I really needed to beef up the stakes. It was a journey of the lifetime.
Yes, yes. And you felt absolutely the connection. I believe you had said something along the lines that the connection built between you and Ernest lasted a lifetime.
Oh, absolutely. It is ongoing. Let me tell you, every day I look in his eyes and I am all the more grateful. Truly, we are seeking the next great journey to conquer together. I mean, let me tell you, true companionship in that one.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. Well, and how are you doing, Victoria?
Oh, I am doing great. I am so glad to be here with you, Pam. As always, you are magnificent. And I am so excited to delve into the work of Alchemist and Laurent tonight. So very excited for what we've got in store and so excited to be part of this beautiful community.
Me too. Me too. And we are going to start with Alchemist, one, because we always start ladies first, you know, and two, because, well, so far Laurence isn't here. But hopefully he'll show up, you know, by the start of the second hour when it's supposed to be his turn. Alchemist, I am so glad to have you here tonight and to be delving into your poetry. So welcome. And
thank you so much for having me. It's great to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Yes. And I will say, Victoria, she will be posting the links of to your poems and Late Night Poets, and but it is your time. So if any point you want her to grab a specific poem from your set list because you want to make sure that one gets read and talked about, just let her know. Or even if you decide there's, you know, a poem on your page that isn't on the set list that you want to throw on the topic board, you know, or message to her. Or me, you know, go right ahead and do that.
All right, awesome.
All right.
Yeah, I'm
so with that being
said, you know, I'll follow. That's it.
Awesome.
Well,
awesome.
I am
very
good
cool.
at leading. You can ask Pam. I'm a middle child, and I do not ask a second time. So in that case, I will throw your first poem up on the board, and you can go ahead and take it away when you're ready.
Okay, you want me to start? All right. Okay, so this first one is called In the Middle. Walking mannequins masquerading mindlessly, having absorbed synthetic beliefs bequeathed from beneath the beggar's DNA, handed down to ground innate supernatures into unnatural selection, insecure sheeple, the way they like us. Feed, food pyramid poison base heavy, keeps the levee standing steady between kindredation of spiritual revelation and the knowledge that we are the ether. Air dare to lighten weighted light body, snap the snare, only awareness breaks the matrix. Internal guidance knows nuanced cancers grow from the sickly glow of guilt, shame, fear. Preying on the faithful, power players, playing less space, all controlling, consuming the rolling flow bestowed at birth. Go ahead. Taste the forbidden. Nature cures. The forest beasts are really in the boardrooms and steeples, bloodthirsty, feasting on the darkness of the people, chained and drained of original synthesis, our true birthright, us, union with source, singularly, independently, syncopatically aligned love. End poem.
Wonderful read here, Alchemist. I have to say, this is just, to me, a very intelligent write, wonderful imagery and metaphors, very clever wordplay. I really like that original sin thesis, you know, separating it into two words with the play on words with the idea of the sin and then the thesis, the theory of or the thought of. And I really like how this speaks about the idea of how people are, you know, afraid to think for themselves, or they're guided. And I love the use of the word sheeple. I like how you use the dashes almost to make these extended sentences that connect to each other. And I would like to know, because like I noticed that you do like to play with words, is what are some of your favorite poetic devices to use?
I think I like sound a lot. So alliteration, rhyme, obviously. I like to do a lot of things with that. I don't really ever sit and think about, you know, am I going to use a simile or a metaphor or, you know, a symbol necessarily like that. I think it's more about sound for me and sort of the using language. And I like a lot of opposition, you know, so it's like, you know, the dark and lightness. And, you know, so I kind of tend to do things like that a lot. Showing the, you know, dual nature of things. That's sort of something that is in my mind a lot when I write. But, you know, it's funny. When I write these poems, I'm not even really thinking about any of that. It just sort of comes out. And things that it just flows, you know. I don't, even with punctuation and things like that, once in a while I'll say, okay, let me put a, you know, period here. But for the most part, I really don't think about any of that when I write it. I just kind of do it.
I like that. I like that you trust your instinct. And yeah, I did notice that when I was reading your poetry today, is that you do have a lot of juxtaposition, the idea of the opposite. So wonderful answer there. And Victoria, your thoughts and question, if you have one.
Yeah. So this actually, I've been watching The Midnight Club with my husband as of late, one, because I like spooky stuff, but two, it's got this really intriguing thought in it, which really reminded me, your poem really reminded me of, which is, this is a home, it's a hospice for young adults, late teens, early 20s that have gone there because they're going to die. And so it's this club that meets at midnight and tells stories. And one of the girls has, part of her plot line is that she is seeking a cure. There's something about the house. There's a story of another girl who had a similar cancer that was cured in that house. And one of the conversations that takes place is they are talking about the five sisters from Greek mythology, about like it's Aegea, Hygieia, and those ones. But they're the five sisters, and they're in various lore. They're in Egyptian, they're in Greek, they're in Roman lore. But there's a very poignant conversation where she is talking to a lady who lives nearby, who lives in the philosophy of nature. And basically this woman says, the world has gone so mad that we believe that to be in nature, to seek nature as a cure, means that we are crazy. We have created a society where we find safety in synthetic. We look for those steeples, those churches, or we look for modern medicine like chemotherapy that often comes with far more drastic detriment than nature sometimes has. And there is things in nature. You know, I think about my mother who is looking to make, she's making some kind of antibiotic with, there is these things in nature. And if we look back in history, it was there. It is only within the last 100, 200 years that we have relied on chemicals to be antibiotics and cures. And so this piece really reminds me of that. It reminds me of the way that we take safety and security in modernization, forgetting that in the not too distant past, we didn't have all of this. And so my question is where did this poem stem from? Was there a poignant moment in your life that made you pause and think about this? Or is this more of a philosophy that you felt has just kind of been the ongoing theme of your life that came out in this beautiful expression?
It's funny. I had a pretty significant spiritual awakening last year. And that's actually when I started writing. I never wrote before. And, you know, you go through these different phases of awakenings, you know, and when the things that you can eat, the things that you can consume at any given point in the process are different, you know. And, when I first started, I couldn't eat meat at all. And I couldn't drink alcohol. And I used to drink every night, you know, every night I would drink wine and I couldn't drink alcohol just at all. My body wouldn't handle it anymore. And, you know, different things just become things that you've always done, things that you've always consumed, whether it be, you know, TV or, you know, music, whatever it is, you can't anymore. And it just changes. So my most recent thing is my food is changing again, you know, so I went off of like dairy. I was having this horrible heartburn and just a lot of stomach problems. So I went off of dairy, gluten, and sugar, and instantly I started to feel better. And, you know, it just got me thinking about, you know, like the food pyramid, right? And like they sell us this idea of, you know, you're supposed to be eating these things in order to have this balanced diet, when in reality, it doesn't serve my body, you know, to eat that. Just like when I try to do like, you know, I've tried to be a vegetarian many times in my life, and that never served me. Like, you know, so it's always like, in any given moment, like you have to be reading your own body to know what it needs to nourish itself. And, you know, that also then got me thinking about everything else with, you know, just the things that they feed us through, you know, like the patriarchy, right? Like the religion. And I have a poem on here about my, you know, Catholic school upbringing and, you know, just this idea that we as women, especially, and sort of like the superpowers that we do have, that are sort of all pushed down. You know, we're made to think that we're crazy. We're made to think that, you know, this is something evil if we, you know, are using plant magic or, you know, plant medicine or anything like this when we channel things and we have our intuition and these things that are natural to us. You know, and I'm sure they're natural to men too. I don't mean to just say it's women, but, you know, all those things are like coming out in me now, you know, to realize that I don't have to like hide that stuff, that like I can let that come out. So I think that's kind of where this poem came from. It was really about the food pyramid to start off with.
That is really cool. That is a wonderful question, Victoria. And I really like the answer it brought out. And you know, you're right, Alchemist. There is a certain magic to women. And it that has been repressed through history, and the opportunity to think for ourselves, you know, absolutely wonderful discussion there. So, and Victoria, what do you have for us next?
Well, next I have Spearfish Ing by Alchemist. And go ahead and take it when you're ready.
Spearing out essentialities. Need some order here. I saw a beautiful pond surrounded by autumnal summer fired fawns mirrored yesterday back to me, a black swan and some fish. Water weaved downstream, but nothing else moved. Fish frozen, swan still. Reality really isn't real. Broken seals, sealed too tight, bleeding on the heels of, hold up, it's gone again. These shoes are too damn tight, no ground in sight. Gone, bon, fawn, long, con, song, sung, fung, mung, bung, jung, june, bug, snug, tug, tally, tug, trolling, trailing, triangularing, blaring, song, sung. Ponytail, dressing, seen from behind, magnetically pulled back into minds, eyeing what happened to that child. But she is the he that can't really see that we become us stuck in these trusses must ever now bound but free. We don't know that we so know our so separate oneness identity, but yet we do also know, you know? It sounds kind of crazy when I read it now.
Oh, it was great fun. Victoria, let's start with your thoughts.
So what I really like about this is that it feels almost like grounding to begin with. I know that I'm personally in therapy for a few issues, because let's be honest, we all have issues. But I'm in therapy, and one of the things that I'm supposed to practice is when I'm feeling overwhelmed or anxious, or, you know, the world is just feeling too out of control for me, I'm supposed to ground myself. And sometimes that's relaxing my muscles, and sometimes it's focusing on things around me, describing the scene around me. And so to me, this starts off feeling very grounding. It feels like you're connecting to nature. But in that moment of connecting, there's that understanding of chaos. And so from there, I feel like it almost evolves into free writing, which is a really, in my mind, fascinating type of writing style, where you actually just kind of write whatever comes to mind. There's not a thought, there's not a meant for it, an intention for it. And it frees up your mind in order to connect with the spirits, your spirituality, and you can develop some really deep messages from that. And I actually feel like you succeeded in that in the later half of the poem, after we are working our way through this seeming gibberish that really is that connection and freeing of the mind to connect to a deeper level. And that's where you get those beautiful things like magnetically pulled back into mind, eyeing what happened to that child. But she is the he that can't really see that we became us stuck. Convoluted, but to me, it speaks of that inner child connecting with your inner child, understanding that the inner child didn't necessarily think in the terms of he, she, we, they, them, what have you. We just know that at some point along the way, we became stuck. And because of that, we almost kind of lose our identities, which we always say is just an evolution of self. So my question, and of course, ending in the question of do we actually know who we are? Do we know our identity? At least that's how I interpret it. So my question, with all of that in mind, and again, my interpretation can be wrong, my question is, did you intentionally practice free writing in this to connect to that spirituality? And do you do that often? Does it help you with your meditation and your own spiritual journey? What has been your experience with it?
Yeah, no, you exactly, you know, the interpretation is really close, I think, to what my intention was here. And these things go through my head like constantly, you know, and it's funny because in meditation, a lot of times, like off, like, you know, how you're in that twilight, right? Like you're kind of like in and out of sleep almost. And like, it's almost like it's this weird loop that goes on in my head with just words, and there's so many words in here, you know, like it just freaks me out sometimes. And it is, I guess, I never thought of it that way, but I, you know, it is like a grounding kind of thing for me, you know. And with this one, I was trying to kind of show the idea of what we, and I really did see this pond. I actually, and I took that picture, and it was like the fish did not move. Like the swine, I don't know if they were fake. Like, I don't know what was going on, but it was so trippy when we saw this. And it just got me thinking that, like, you know, reality, like nothing, none of this is real. You know, like none of it is. It's all absurd. You know, the whole, everything is. And, you know, so just to use like the words in an absurd way that way, as part of just like what, and the whole shoe thing, because I kind of lost my train of thought. So I was like, let me just write that. And then the shoe thing was, I had been talking to my therapist the day before, and we were just talking about how, again, this idea of the powers that be, you know, whoever that is, have taken us so far away from our true natures, right, as spiritual beings having this earthly experience. And one of the things that she brought up were shoes, right? And she's like, yeah, you know, we're not ever touching the earth with our feet. You know, we have these like thick shoes on all the time. So she actually bought those like earth shoes, or I don't know what they're called, but they like keep you on the ground more, right? So you're more grounded. And, you know, she felt so different. So that's what, you know, I kind of lost it. So that's when I thought of the shoes. And then the last part was definitely about this idea of the feminine and masculine dualities that are inside of each one of us. This is definitely a big theme in my awakening and, you know, therefore in my poetry, is this idea of finding balance between my feminine side and my masculine side, which has not been an easy task, believe me, because I grew up in a really powerful matriarchy, and a lot of wounded feminine energy in that. And, you know, that causes your masculine energy to sort of like blow up, right? so that when you, you know, you get more aggressive and it's very hard to have healthy relationships with, you know, a healthy masculine energy, let's say, because you're so dominating. And, you know, it's like you got to get things done. You know, it's like you got to make things happen all the time. And that's the way I grew up. And that's the way, you know, but it's not been, it's not what it is now. You know, it's like trying to learn how to balance those two energies. So, yeah, the inner child was definitely absolutely key to the peace there, and trying to heal her and him, you know, the little, masculine and feminine energies within me as a child. So, yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
Very cool. Very cool. I like that. And yes, definitely a great question. I thought this is wonderful with the imagery. And I do like how you start out with being a poem about nature. And then you have that transition, that hold up, it's gone. And then you go into that meditative sing-song wordplay which was just absolutely fun to listen to. And then the end line, we don't know what we sow, know our seed per se oneness identity, but yet we do owe. The idea of trying to find that identity, that connection. So excellent write and very well done. And my question is I would like to know, what does your writing process look like?
It's, you know, really disappointing probably because there really isn't one. I mean, I something will just pop in my head, like a line, an image, something will just pop in my head and I'll have to like go just write it right then. And I do. And that's kind of it. I don't really ever go back. Very rarely will I go back to a poem and change anything in it. This is really it's all a stream of consciousness for me, really, when it comes to this process. And actually just started writing a book, and this is my first attempt to do anything like that. And yeah, and, you know, you can't write a book like that, you know. Like you have to really sit down, and there's all this planning, and there's, you know, thought, and it's so difficult for me. And, it, you know, so I kind of just set myself free with it because it's about my awakening, you know, anyway. It's not a fiction book. And, you know, I kind of just, like, I said, you know, I'm not being myself with this when I'm trying to write in too much of, like, a narrative style. So I just started letting like the poetry sort of guide me, and it just flowed effortlessly, you know? So for me, it's very like about instinct with writing and just letting what like my inner self, whatever, my higher self, whoever that is, like letting that out and just like, you know, kind of channeling that almost, right? And just letting it go.
I like that. And one quick follow-up question connected with that one. Are you a person who listens to music when they're writing or does not listen to music? I always like to ask people that.
Yeah, I don't listen to music when I write normally. I do listen to a lot of music though. And I actually get a lot of images and inspiration from music. A lot of my poems, especially my old poems, are based upon songs. So, but not when I actually sit down to write. I don't listen to music then.
I understand that. Very cool. All right. And Victoria, your thoughts?
You want me to give my thoughts again? Or?
Oh, did you already go over this one? Oh, you did. I am so sorry. No, you don't.
It's okay. I mean, one thing I did yep, want to add is that I found it really delightful how you pulled in spearfishing in the title, because given what you even talked about and what you shared with us, just as an extra little comment, what I find delightful about that is that the act of spearfishing, you have to kind of stand in this still position, not moving, waiting for life to move around you. And in many ways, that's what you did with this. And yet from that darkness, from that muddiness, you were able to form this beautiful poem and this thought that asked us to delve even into ourselves. So I thought even adding that with the title was what I had after the fact. But I will move us on to your next piece, which I have as In the Night.
Okay, In the Night. Black velvet lined walls, floor upon high, surround unsound, monochrome cut up window, sanguine stain torch lit from the inside, deluminates a narrow hall, lined all with tall reflectors, baroque gilded gold framed, images seen from the outside, strobe light lit, effortless link between dark and light, outline dove floating upon backs of crocodiles, coos in the night, startles. Sticky ruby red grapefruit juice spills all over your truck. End poem.
Wonderful read. Yeah, this one definitely had almost a flow of consciousness feel to it, too. I really enjoyed and appreciated the imagery. There was, to me, a sensuality in this. With sand green stain torch lit from the inside and the sticky ruby red grapefruit juice spills all over your truck. And I like the change of tone of voice when you get to that end line. I found the most thought-provoking line to be dove floating upon backs of crocodiles coos in the night, startles. The dove being the representation of peace, and the on the back of the crocodile makes me think about the whole idea of the story of the scorpion and the frog, and you know how the frog asks for a ride, and you know, and then the scorpion ends up stinging him, and the frog is surprised, and the scorpion says, "Well, you should have known, I was a scorpion." And basically, it makes me think about the idea of how we're surprised that we get bit, and when all along we've been riding and should have known on the backs of crocodiles. Excellent write and very well done. And now is the time in the show where I would like to give you the opportunity to talk about where people can see your work, where you can, they can find your work, obviously on All Poetry, but are you published on any other sites? Do you have any books published or any poetry published in books? Tell us about all that.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is it. You know, I'm on All Poetry, and I haven't branched out to anything else. I have short stories that are on we have like a sister story page that, you know, but it's all linked, so. Yeah, no, this is it for me. I haven't published anything else. And hopefully, you know, with this book that I have, that I'm working on now, that will be published sometime in the future. But as of right now, this is, you can just catch me here.
All right. Well, when you do get that book published, do know that we have a topic board in Late Night Poets where you can share your book link for
okay.
And I've never done it myself, but I do know that like when Jeremy's here on the show, he's always telling people that it is, you know, fun and easy to self-publish and encouraging people to give it a try. And we do have people in Late Night Poets that, you know, they've done that, they know what they're doing, and definitely are there to offer up advice if you ever need it on self-publishing.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I will definitely reach out when I'm ready. Thank you so much for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Victoria, your thoughts?
So truth be told, I'm kind of conflicted when I read this poem, in part because some of it reads really harsh and jaded and painful, and yet those same moments can be read almost sensual. And so I guess, you know, so, gosh, I don't even know what to say. I'm so conflicted. In a good way, in a good way, because there is that heavy symbolism of red, which can be passion and it can be pain, or blood. You have the sanguine saint, sanguine being blood, but that can also be that deep passion that's flowing through. The idea of the narrow hall could be life encompassing you, and yet at the same time, there's that dichotomy in it of intimateness, that light coming from the narrow hall being that moment of passion and orgasm overflowing into the outside. And so I see pain and I see beauty in the same thing. A male could be kind of like that crocodile of a lover who's just there to ravage it, whereas the dove is delicate and elegant and needs to be taken care of. And so I guess in this one, we can be seen in at least two varying lights that I see already, possibly even three with rage and anger. What was your inspiration for this piece? What prompted this?
Always trying to show these opposites. It was, this is really about like our light and our dark natures. And again, you know, trying to find the balance within that. And, our lightness is brighter because of our darkness. So it's, you know, I always like to like embrace the darkness in me. And it's a big part of me. You know, I was in darkness for a long time in my life. And, through this process, I'm starting to see that, you know, my light now, my knowledge, my empathy, my compassion, like all the things that I have are amplified because of how much darkness I was in for so long. So I have a lot of respect for my dark side and other people's too, you know, and I was trying to show that. And I almost felt like with this one, like the idea of me having all this self-reflection, you know, and it's bloody, you know, the whole thing is really, you know, any kind of internal work, you know, healing work is messy as anything. And, but it was almost like I had the image of someone like, watching me from the outside. And, you know, and I was thinking of like a love situation with this one too, that like, you know, he's sort of looking at me from the outside. And my peaceful side is like, you know, floating. I'm not scared of the crocodile at all, you know, and I'm just sort of floating on him. And the peacefulness of the dove, too, is what startles him, right? So, like, he's used to me being the crocodile and raging and, you know, all this kind of stuff. But when the peaceful part of me comes out, it's almost like that's what's startling. You know, that's what scares him. Because again, you know, I spent so many years in this, you know, really sort of heavy masculine energy. And so now it's almost like when I'm peaceful and when I'm gentle and things like that, it's almost off-putting because it's like, whoa, what's she doing? Like, you know, so that's kind of where I was going with this one.
I really love very that. Cool. And thank you for sharing that too. That was a very vulnerable statement to share. I mean, you've been vulnerable through this whole show, but thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Up next, I have your piece, Bizarrity.
Okay. Processing what I'm fed through mystical meetings. Godhead, rosary clicks echo in cold marbled pillared space, incense burns from golden urns swung on chains, wafting smoke, screening the meaning of what is meant to know, fear, unleavened education taught, confessing the sins unheard by the din of great bubble yum bubblegum bursting out rebellion at the hell they threaten, pee seeps through polyester shorts, gym uniform, green and gold, unfitting a little girl who dares to break the rules during field day. Little brides and grooms march in paired procession to the altar to eat the flesh and drink the blood that is magically sanctified by the guy who only speaks to the kids who play sports. I can't breathe when I run. Dolly couldn't have fathomed a surrealer realism. End poem.
Amazing reading right there. Yeah, this one really strikes a chord with me on the idea of, you know, organized religion. And as we talked about the idea of the patriarchy, and I like how this one speaks on the idea of a young girl learning to think for herself, learning to be herself, be that rebel, and very visceral with the imagery. Peace seeps through polyester shorts, gym uniform, green and gold, unfitting a little girl who dares to break the rule, field day. And mention of the sanctified by the guy who only speaks to the kids who play sports. I thought that line there spoke really well on some of the, and I won't say all, but some of the hypocrisy of some organized religions. So powerful right there. I feel like this one is definitely very deeply personal. For my question, I would like to know how you got started writing poetry.
It started in as with my therapist. The summer before. And she was like, do you want to try some art therapy? And I was like, well, I can't really do any art. I always wrote in a journal, you know. So I was like, she's like, well, what about writing? You know, you like to write. And I was like, well, I don't want to journal anymore because it's like I look at these journals from 10 years ago and it's like I'm complaining about the same stuff. Like, journal is not working for me. So she's like, well, what about like writing short stories? So I was like, okay, I'll try it. So it started as me writing like these short stories about different things that happened in my life, but I would almost like fictionalize them. But they were really true stories, just like this one is. And slowly they evolved into these, you know, they started out as short stories, then they kind of went to these like story poems. You know, they got more and more tighter, you know, and then eventually they just turned into regular poems. Which was strange because I don't read poetry, you know, and, you know, obviously I went to college. I'm an English teacher, so I went to college for English. But, you know, so I was exposed to everything, but it never really, like, stuck with me. You know, it wasn't something that I do normally. Even on here, you know, I don't even really read anyone on here. I'm a terrible reader. It's you know, unless I have to, you know, do a show or – you know, if I'm pushing one of my poems through or something, because I really didn't, when I first started writing, I didn't want to psych myself out of being here, number one, and be like, you know, you stink, like, stop writing. And also, I didn't want to be influenced by anyone. I wanted to really, like, genuinely, like, find my voice. Like, that was my purpose in doing this at first. And now, you know, the more I go on, the more now I'm evolving and I'm feeling a little bit more confident. And I feel like I have found my voice. So now I'm starting to read other people more. But, yeah, it really just started out as like an exercise in therapy, honestly. And it still is. Well, I mean, every poem I write is an exercise in therapy.
Oh, absolutely. And you... I mean, you probably would not be surprised, you know, that there's so many people that poetry is part of their therapy or, you know, part of their way of going through a healing process. So, yeah, and excellent answer there. And Victoria, your thoughts?
Wow. This one's a heavy piece, and honestly, I'm glad that I did not have to comment first because to be a little personal, one of the things that I'm working on currently in therapy within the last 4 weeks, we started about 4 weeks ago, really three, is that my mother's a narcissist. It's something I've talked about in a few of my shows when I was doing regular shows. Part of her abuse cycle was spiritual abuse. And so my own faith, and this is, again, part of the therapy that I'm dealing with, is that I have a very personal faith, and it does not fall into the traditional line of that particular faith. And so I have a very hard time finding community who does not ostracize me within a few months, because I don't really fall into the parameters that they like to see. And this poem really hit that nail on the head for me in so many ways. The idea that if you dress a certain way, if you do a certain activity, if you show up and follow the liturgy, that somehow this magical smoke from the urn or the unleavened bread of the sacraments is somehow going to make you part of the community. But again, going back to some of the other poems that you even wrote that we've talked about tonight, so often there is such an idea of you have to act a certain way, you have to dress a certain way, you have to speak a certain way, you have to worship a certain way, and you're punished for it, really begs the question of, is this even, you know, doesn't matter what religion is, Dalai Lama, Buddha, Christ, what have you. Is this, are we actually practicing the religions that these people established, or have we diluted them down to the point of just controlling people? And so this piece, it strikes me deeply in something that I'm currently wading through. So, thank you.
Yeah, religion,
truly
religion has been like a, yeah, religion's a huge, you know, part of my upbringing. You know, I was raised Catholic, and just so much. I mean, you know, I'm not even going to start because it's just so much to go into. But this actually really happened. I was like in first or second grade, and I was, it was field day, and I was chewing gum, and we weren't supposed to be chewing. And one of the nuns like saw me chewing this gum. I was sitting down, I can still see it. I was in the gym and I was sitting up against the wall, and cause I didn't like to play and stuff. Like when I was always like a weird kid anyway, like I never, you know, would like to do like things that other kids did. And I was a loner and I still am, you know, always. And she, the look on her face of rage towards me, because I was chewing this gum and I'm trying to swallow the gum, you know, and so I peed my pants because like I was so scared of her. And I never put this together before, but a couple years, you know, this, I must have been in kindergarten, because then like a couple years later, I make my first like confession, right? And so they sent us home half day and they were like, well, go home and think about your, you know, sins and like what you want to say or whatever. So there was a store across the street from my house. So what are you, in like third grade, you know, second grade when you make your confession, right? And there was a store across the street from my house, and I went in there and I stole a pack of Great Bubble Yum. I had never stolen anything before, right? And I went to this park and I sat and I ate this whole pack of gum, right? Just like, and I relished this. Like I like tasted every, I was blowing bubbles and everything. And one piece after another, you know, I ate. And then I went to confession that night and I didn't confess it. I just made stuff up. Like I said, you know, oh, I was like mean to my brother, or, you know, I didn't help my mom or whatever, but like I didn't confess the fact that I just stole something. And, you know, that story has always stuck with me, that like, you know, I've always had that rebellion in me, but yet I, you know, I clung to it at the same time, because you're so, you know, it's what you know, so it's what you do. And I never put the gum together, though, that like when I was, that's what made me get in trouble that day was gum. And then that gum was the thing that I used to kind of say like F you to everything that day when I was supposed to go confess, you know? So, yeah, it's really complicated. You know, the whole religious thing is very complicated, but.
You're right. It is. It is. You know, any one of us in any type of, you know, religious household, you know, it can get complicated. So, yeah, that is for sure. A wonderful, wonderful question there, Victoria. And what do you got for us next?
Up next, I have Awakening, a Poemery.
That didn't come up for me yet.
Okay, you might have to refresh the page.
Yeah, I'm just going this way.
Are you?
I don't know why I'm not seeing that online. I saw the other ones. I'll just go into my own thing.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a long one. Oh, hold on. I think it's my computer. My computer's going slow. Okay, hold on. I'm almost there. Sorry. I don't know why it's doing this. Okay. All right, I got it. Childlike disconnect. Knowing the knowing of bitter fruit sowing, still reaping repeated, uncomfortably seeded cycles of recycled unrelease. Sorrow swallowed peace by passive peace. Eating lies, vomiting sighs, dying, denouncing the all-seeing eyes. Mystical seas tickle tactical me's as I drown in droning subhuman unease. Seize the sword I once adored and slice my life unguarded into rat-tatted ribbons hung round the rotted out trunks of rooted trees blowing stagnant in disharmonic breeze. Please pick me up at a allotted stop in a converted school bus painted red and blue, crying purple streaks left, barring the skew. Shackled with manacles manifested by bipolarity's means, maternal maid lightweight tear, maggot-infested, busted-out schemes seemingly conceived in a particularly intense game of truth or dare. While driving, we sing along to that withering song that goes... Drinking intoxicating jungle juice you squeeze from the sweetness that used to be in me, all the way to the shoreline of the divine design mystical sea. I hobble barefoot, still fettered in the shallows, as you unload the instrument you built from my bones, strung with the hair, passion pulled from wild night, open air moan, while bored in the hole of the gallows, serving our jointless sentences over, under infinity. A great wave of all the days of sea foamy haze sweeps me days to the shore grave of everything I gave, finding ways out of the maniacal maze. And in the hollow center of the riptidal cave, I hear you dreamily pluck the haunting strain. I know. Swelling hands turn me round and round, no solid ground to be found, out of into the most desolate part of the living sea. Treading alone, lonely, leaden limbs struggle in vain to keep me free from the immensely inflated fee of spiritual mental clarity, I sink. Panic response no longer alive. I relax, relinquish incessant will to ride or die, accepting the sweet shore death that accompanies one who succumbs to the sea's depths. In the darkest league, numbed by the black freeze, seeing a kaleidoscope of heavenly colored light, I'm suddenly swallowed whole, awakened. In a cavernous womb, on a bed of warm, dense, saline, corrosive bile, I float. Senses all deprived, an unkind diatribe, voices of past lives kill the chill vibe, and ostracize the minuscule size of communally constructed combination mys and the lies I tell my past, present selves. Unwanted future fills as the Degas swills, other floatsome creatures like overprescribed happy pills. Hot stings this gelatinous bath brings, burning thin skin wrinkled in the kiln of smothered pseudo-loving unkind kin. I see it all, the downward rise, the shooting fall. Over and over, they slither slime attached to body mind, leaving lesion traces, tested times, a pantomime of all the linear failures to which I was inclined. Memories disremembered by benders, attempting and unbending to straighten diseased realities into something benign. Tip-tap-toe through fractured, fragile ego. Having ignored phosphorescent signs, I slowly begin to unwind. I pluck the offending invisible binds and slurp them down one by one like plump late autumnal oysters, reveling in the revealing scorch of carrying the martyr's torch that darkened all the convoluted choreatic ways. I cry in guttural moans, screeching, shrieking, muffled tones, seeing the always nude unknowns, causing a hum in my massive host. Reverberated, unabated, unstated, masturbated, self-inflicted unpleasure into the sonic ears of the desolate, overcrowded fears of salty, fallen, tongue-lashed, licked tears, swelling in our collective dreers of us, the dreaded, yet chosen, prophetic self-seers. Filled with supernatural cedar oil, I become the illuminator, lighting the belly of the god-beast whose feast overstuffed belches my rebirthal release. I free rise high to sister moonlit sky with pearl covered over cataract eyes that now see beyond useless used-to-bes. Silky tendril hair flares all around, oral arms eating new harms that dawn as they will. Bioluminescence, my essence, breaks the glass reflected still life surface and illuminates the seekers drowning in the hellacious grit of healing slow sand. I kiss you, open mouth, so you can taste the sting waking will bring, secondhand in poem.
Bravo, Alchemist. That was just a wonderful performance. You really need to make an audio of that poem or be on a stage performing it. Wonderful spoken word piece. And Victoria, your thoughts.
I think this is such a marvelous piece because it really starts off in those pre-awoken days when you're childlike, you're in the moment, you're not really concerned about the what-ifs and what's around you and where you may not be seeing things. It makes me think of my own children who can be so focused on needing a snack that they are not aware that we need to get in the car because maybe there's someone who's not safe walking by. It's that singularity, that focus on the moment. And you show that through distractions, the childlike connections to the lover of perhaps in your teens or even in adulthood who just provides those moments to be encompassed by them and nothing else. But eventually you have that earth-shattering realization. It could come by heartbreak because it forces us to question and reconnect. It can come from a realization that, you know, family might not be so safe. It comes from so many beautiful things and hard things that you captured that beauty, that pain, that awakening so masterfully that there even is this opportunity of almost like a siren's kiss that draws you in yet changes you in a way that it leaves you guessing what is that, what happened. And so I think this is just, this is marvelous and deep and visceral, and yet it's beautiful at the same time and haunting and dangerous. What would you say would have been or was your own awakening? Was it this or was it a quiet moment that just internally was so shocking that it pulsated out from around you?
I was involved in, it's like a twin flame kind of relationship, you know, and this man that I was with, I was, you know, really chaotic when we got together and, you know, I was drinking a lot and thing and, he was like, you know, we can't do this. So I really wanted to be with him. So I was like, all right, you know what? Let me just think about healing, right? So, and I had been in therapy already. Like I had already, but it was almost like being with him reignited the past that I hadn't healed, right? So really, I wasn't even yelling at him. You know, I was like yelling about something else. And, but he kind of, you know, he, his energy, let's say, awakened my energy as a divine feminine. And that started me on this process. And I went to yoga. I went to hot yoga. And I went every day because I was trying to quit smoking. And I wasn't trying to have an awakening at all. And then, you know, I was sort of going through it. So he and I were in separation. Like, we weren't even together anymore. And it was like this whole crazy situation. But my dad lived with me. And my dad moved out. And that was a terrible situation, too. So my dad moved out. And it was like instantly, like the minute my space was cleared, I started having all these downloads and like all this, like, you know, angel contact and like just, you know, my energy was just moving. Like, I mean, it was insane. It came on so fast and it came on heavy, you know, it was a big awakening all at once. And you can see it too, like in my early poems, they're just like all over the place. Like, I'm just trying to make sense of things, but yeah, I mean, I didn't try to do any of this. It wasn't any, like, nothing really big happened in my life or, you know, anything like that. It wasn't, like, a big tragedy or anything. It was just my time, I think, really, you know, honestly. And once I was able to sort of get, you know, clear out my space and have that time just to myself, it just kind of came on really heavy. But with this, I'm trying to show, really, that it's, you know, it's not for the faint of heart, you know, like, awakenings are extremely difficult and they're brutal, you know, and it's time consuming and it takes so much. It just sucks the life out of you to like pour the life back into you, you know, and it happens over and over and over again. You heal from something, you know, and it's like, you think, oh, okay, good. I'm good. You know, I had the tower moment, you know, and then, you know, 2 months later, you're at a different level. You got to go back to that all again because now you're going to feel it from a different perspective. You know, so it's just like this brutal kind of, you know, you become so strong and you become so much more evolved and everything. But yet at the same time, it is an extremely painful and difficult process. So it makes me wonder about people who seek these awakenings, you know, who like, do certain things, you know, whether it be a certain kind of yoga or whatever, like trying to get to enlightenment, you know, and it's like, really? Like, you're really going to like seek this out? But I mean, you know, obviously the end result is much better, you know, and it's great that you had now have this new way of seeing, but it's a really, really, really difficult process to go through, which is what I was trying to show in this poem.
Absolutely. Wonderful question and answer. Yeah, I really like how this speaks on the idea of the journey and how difficult it is to, you know, awaken. I do particularly like where you say, I hobble barefoot, still fettered in the shallows as you unload the instrument you built for my bones, strung with the hair, passion pulls and wild night open air moans. And the imagery and a great wave of all the days of sea foamy and the way you spell sea, S-E-E, and put it next to with connected to foamy is that idea of that vision that isn't completely clear. Almost like the blinding of that third eye. So just amazing imagery and metaphors. A powerful write and very well done. And I, of course, cannot go without asking you the casserole dish question, because if I didn't, I think Jeremy would be extremely disappointed. And so I am going to hand you a casserole dish, and you are going to put in it the ingredients that represent you as a person and a poet. And keep in mind, the ingredients do not have to be food. What are you going to put in that casserole dish? What is the alchemist casserole?
God, student, writer, poet, seeker, teacher, brokenness, wholeness, and love.
I like that. That's wonderful, wonderful combination of ingredients. Very cool. Now, this would usually be the time that we'd move on to the second person, but unfortunately, and I was actually looking forward to delving into his poetry, but we have to have him here. Lawrence is not here, so if both you ladies are up to it, we will continue forward with Alchemist poetry.
Oh, okay, cool.
So,
that's a shit. Did he?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Okay.
All right, very
all
cool.
Right. I'm cool with it.
In that case, up next is my mother's daughter.
Okay, let me get this. I'm going to go back into late night poets and see if I can get, if it's coming up for me now. Okay,
okay.
Great. I got it now. Right, sorry about that.
No problem.
Do you remember your time? Okay. Do you remember your time in the tomb? Mediterranean pyramids pirouette across desert landscapes and deserted mind's eye. Black coal outline, annihilating wiles, queen of the Nile, ate men like crocodiles. Lady Lazarus broke the bell jar and stepped on the shards barefooted for fun. Found under the house, but the crush didn't last like it did with Eveline. Scream, she ate men like air. I remember my time in the womb, swimming in the silence, burst from all the violence, bloodied from their immortality. But I'm not like them. I find mankind in the season of his discontent and offer the colostrum dripping from my breast to feed his need, indeed provide the nourishment to survive. My mother's howl and cry in shame for the crumbs Lucifer gave that I ate. But I remember my time in the tomb, the cold, dank, dark, bejeweled room, the echoes of beetle shells clicking as they crawl, flesh ripping as they maul. And I remember my time in the womb, when the men you ingested infested the amniotic fluid where I rested and changed the peaceful ecosystem into something strange, aggressive. Their energy inside us didn't just divide us, it split us in two. The angry spirits lingered, the pointed arrows fingered a hasty, heated, bloody-hearted coup. I am born of the tomb and the womb, warrior, witch, saint, bitch, all-seeing, civil, witness of the split. I no longer eat fragment scraps, but I also don't devour. I rise from the tomb and give birth from my womb to the balance between the lance and the loom. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there. Again, another powerful write. I like the feminine energy in this and the idea that it's not just to me a symbolization of just a your mother, but rather of Mother Earth, of the way women have that connection and we're mothers and daughters of each other. I really particularly like, but I'm not like them. I find mankind in the season of his discontent and offer the colostrum dripping from my breast. I like that you went with the colostrum because it's that first food that's extremely nutritionally dense. And it's like offering up that nutritionally dense spirituality that mankind needs. And again, we have another one that works really well with the whole idea of juxtaposition and embracing the dark side of yourself. I rise from the tomb, give birth from my womb to the balance between the lance and the loom. I also really like I am born of the tomb and the womb, warrior, witch, saint, bitch. Of course, you know, you can't hear lines like that without all of a sudden getting, you know, I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, like just going through your head. I love that song. I love that song. I used to actually do a show with Incoherent Dust where that was the intro song for our show. That was one of my favorites. So, but yeah, really, like I said, a powerful rite. I'm just amazed with it. Now, I do know you mentioned that you don't do a lot of reading of poetry, but I would like to know, do you have any favorite classic poets? If not, do you have any favorite authors or even like lyricists for songwriting? Do you have any favorite classics that inspire you or, you know?
You know, I would say for poets, when I was in college especially, I was, you know, really into Emily Dickinson. Just the whole idea of, you know, breaking the mold of what was, you know, traditional, what was expected, right, just to do her own thing. Sylvia Plath, obviously, you know, we all love Sylvia
Plath. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
I really like Poe. Too, honestly, I mean, I teach ninth grade, so you know, I'm always doing something with Poe. So for poets, I would say that's probably it. Probably my favorite author is definitely Margaret Atwood. Surfacing is my favorite book of all time, and it's just devastating. I just sobbed, you know, when I read that, and I just like everything that she does. And for music, I really love, you know, Fleetwood Mac, Stevie Nicks, the whole 70s California, you know, soft rock kind of vibe I love. I really, really love old school R&B, but like 70s, you know, like 70s, 80s. I'm like, even though that's like, you know, I'm kind of like an 80s kid, really, you know, I was a teenager in the 80s, but 70s music always like appeals to me a lot. But I like all kinds of music, really.
Very cool. Very cool. And Victoria, your thoughts?
I think this is such a fantastic piece. I mean, there's so many biblical references in just that, which granted, Metatron is not actually a biblical reference, but if you look at Truest Tradition, he is. But there's so many biblical references in this initial part, which again, I think ties back to what we talked about earlier in the show about the problem that religious brings into someone who is actually trying to heal, because it does not allow the freedom to find that. And so I love those initial biblical references, but then you really kind of free yourself and take on more of like that mother nature, holistic, spiritual side. And so I thought that was fantastic. Do you feel, and I don't know if you have children, but do you feel that part of your journey has been bettering yourself just for yourself, or do you feel like a component is also bettering yourself to break a continuing cycle?
Yeah, that's interesting. I actually don't have children, and my, you know, infertility too, I think it also informs, you know, a lot of my poetry and like a lot of my thought processes. Especially now, you know, as I go through menopause, it's kind of like, you know, it's over, you know, like it's not, I'm not going to have that, you know, I'm not going to have that experience. So, you know, there's a lot to deal with that. I, you know, a lot of times you kind of get the sense that when you're having these awakenings, you kind of get the sense that, you know, you're, I have sort of broken so many, like traditionally, like unhealthy, like archetypes, let's say, like in my family line, you know, in that, you know, I live on my own, you know, I bought my own house. I was like the first person to go to college. Well, my brother was the first, I was the first girl to go to college. Self-made, you know, like didn't have really any help doing anything, like left my husband, when I was married, just because I couldn't anymore, you know, like left with nothing, you know, like didn't try to fight for anything, didn't try, like, so I just like broke all these, you know, sort of codependent things, that, codependencies in myself, which were, I was terribly codependent, but also, you know, that was a learned behavior from the, you know, women in my life. And a lot of it was, they had to be, you know, like they had to kind of stick together to make things happen, you know, and, you know, you needed somebody to watch kids while people went to work and, you know, there was no husbands around or fathers around or whatever. So that was something, but that's definitely something that I've broken, you know, in terms of showing that you don't have to have that, you know, my otherness for not having children has been a big, you know, point of contention in my life. It's like you don't fit in anywhere, you know, because everybody around you, even if you're married, you know, it's like everybody around you is married and has kids, and, you know, they have their, all their social things are based upon that and everything. And it's like, you know, I'm always like the odd man out of everything. And it was tough, you know, it was hard to grow up, you know, sort of through that. And I was, like I said earlier, I've always been sort of a loner anyway, you know, so I kind of always like just kind of was like invisible at these things, you know. But in that, you know, in that standing alone kind of spotlight that I'm in all the time, I feel like I have, there is a purpose for that. You know, there is a healing that's sort of part of my feminine line in my family, you know, that even though, so it's not being passed down to my children because I don't have any children, but through this, you know, other people in my life, you know, who see that there is another way to live, you know, you're going to survive. Like you're going to be able to do things that are outside of the norm. And I kind of feel like that's my role in life. That's kind of what God put me here to do, you know, was to show that one can stand on one's own. And I do.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Wonderful discussion on, you know, purpose. Oh, very cool. And what do we got next?
Absolutely. So next we have Self-Portrait by Alchemist. And you go ahead and take that away when you're ready.
Okay. Bittersweet verisimilitude, interspersing internal interludes, sung in bleeding fingerprints on keys, IDs one on the run from imposed false destinies. I'm squatch late too early, and you never meet in the center of equidistance rounding out self-made, paid-for experience. I want Alice Neal to paint me naked in her Spanish Harlem apartment, revealing the pieces of me she sees subjugated, judged, maybe jaded. Red hair faded to white. Has the fire really gone out? Nah. Burns X in eternally. Taut curves covered over now. Goose down pillows weighing heavy under burning skin. Sweating to cool, the inferno of incinerated self-loathing stoked over a lifetime. How many shades would she see, brushstrokes set free, buried within the menopausal me? End poem.
Wonderful read and write. I really like that this paints that picture of a woman going through menopause, the way the body changes, the way it affects the body and the mind. I want Alice Neal to paint me naked in her Spanish Harlem apartment, revealing the pieces of me she sees, subjugated, judged, maybe jaded, red hair faded to white. Has the fire really gone out? Nah. I love, you know, I think it's wonderful the way you bring us along on this ride in your thoughts as you transition from one stanza to the next. And I would like to know, what advice would you give poets just starting? Like, say they just started writing poetry, or they just started writing on all poetry. what advice would you offer up to them?
I would give them the same advice that Wild, who's my collaboration partner, gave me when I first started. And he said to me, write what you know and write how you know how to write it. That's it. Right? Just be yourself. Don't try to like emulate what anyone else is doing, you know, because your authenticity is the magic, right? It doesn't really matter, you know, if you rhyme or you don't rhyme, or if you, you know, use words in different ways or, you know, whatever. Some people hate that, you know, like, you'll even see that in contests a lot, you know, like don't spell things incorrectly on purpose, you know, like don't do stuff like that. So I would say definitely just do what feels organic to you because your spirit, you know, your soul is what we want to read, you know, that's what we want to learn. And, so yeah, so just write what you know and write how you know how to write it. That would be my advice.
That is definitely good advice. And I like that you use the word organic. Write what is organic to you. Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And Victoria, your thoughts.
So what really got me thinking about is what got me on my therapy actually was an unhealthy relationship with food. Started with my mom oinking at me when I ate carrots because carrots, but I actually got diagnosed with body dysmorphia, which is a mental disorder where you hyper-focus on flaws about yourself that other people don't see. And in some ways, this poem really reminded me of that because you see where your body is not what it used to be, those curves that are not so taut, the hair that's turned white, is things that the average stranger on the street may not be aware of, and yet this is that dwelling. And so it to me speaks of the way that we kind of accept life as it is here and now, that we accept the changes that we see in our bodies that seem drastic, but others don't. Would you say, or do you feel that as your body has changed and as you're in this journey, and even the vulnerability of sharing the fact that you did not have kids and having that desire lost and now having it flipped away as you go through menopause, are you finding that there is a healing process that you're going through in that, a reconciling of desires, hopes, and dreams versus reality? How does this poem reflect that impact? If that's part of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's, it is about that, right? It is about that idea of, I picked Alice Neal because she's so good at, you know, sort of putting that bare bulb, you know, on top of her subjects and really picking out and exaggerating and almost, making it like cartoon-like, you know, people's bodies and their flaws or what they perceive their flaws to be, or not even what they perceive them to be, but what society would perceive them to be. And, you know, as you go through menopause, the weight, you know, your body, I mean, I just, you know, I've weighed places I'd never even dreamed I would have it. Like, where did this come from? You know, and it's like, you know, my body already like turned on me once, you know, like when I couldn't have a baby, and now it's like it's turning on me again, you know, and it's making me look totally different. And so it is about just trying to reconcile that. But, you know, it's funny because in the midst of all that, I think in a lot of ways I feel sexier right now than I ever have, you know, that there's that freedom of that comes with middle age, which is, you know, you don't really care what people think, you know, you just kind of are doing it. And so I would say, like, you know, like just I would feel like, I think I feel almost more sensual now than I ever have, even though I probably don't look as, you know, perfect or whatever that is, you know, our idea of perfect. I don't look like that anymore. But I definitely feel more, I feel sexier. I feel more, I would pose naked. You know what I mean? Like, I'm at that place in my life where, like, I were probably, you know, 10 years ago when my body, I was working out all the time and, you know, my body looked really good, I would have been too self-conscious to do that. But now I'd be like, yeah, you can paint me, you know? Like, so it's kind of like it's both, you know, it's looking at the insecurity, but it's also sort of showing that it's, we're very empowered at this, at these moments of our lives. I feel like menopause is a very empowering time for me personally. Even though there's a lot of, you know, heartbreak and things that go with it, a lot of frustration that the hot flashes are just that I've had are brutal. And really frustrating, like when you're just like sweating all the time, you know, and but it makes me glowier, you know, too, at the same time. So it's like there's this, you know, there's always like the two sides of everything for me, you know. Oh,
absolutely. I like how you spoke on the confidence that comes with middle age. Very cool. All right. And what do we got next, Victoria?
All right. Up next, we have Surreal Mind Escape.
Okay. All right. Surreal Mind Escape. Striped sky, gray and cream. Was it all but a dream without a dream? A stealthy scheme? The Parisian pickpocket on the tour bus on the Seine? Or the fisherman casting his seine to capture my guilelessness, swimming naked in the twilight, illuminated by your oil lamp lit to peak. To eat, grilled with acerbic sweet Sorrento lemon, served with buttery fingerlings on a crisp Sauvignon Blanc. Do the motions set in emotion emote extremes? Seems. We fail as we flail in the stream of conscious necessities of creative courage, tying tick slips in trash truck, leaky oil slicks of slathered Stella lathered over love, lost levitates like Lion's Gate, gone along with the songs we sung in the screen house, escaping the mosquito bites on hot summer nights, eyes left sweating in situ, instead of like Daphne, flowering roots in the earth I own that you just visited. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Alchemist. And Victoria, let's start with your thoughts.
You know, I think that this is a really stunning piece. And to me, it almost speaks of the ebb and flow of life, that the process of healing that comes in big waves and then seems to go out and you think it's over and then maybe comes back in big waves. Do you feel that your healing process has had that ebb and flow? And with that in mind, I've noticed there's this water theme in a lot of your poems, when especially you're talking about these deep emotions. So would you say that that's even an element that you've connected with in this process?
Yeah, it's, you know, I see that too. I can't stay away from like the ocean, you know, in these poems. And I think too, because I associate the sea, the S-E-A, with the seeing, you know, literally S-E-E, right? Like vision. And so I constantly want to combine those two things all the time. And honestly, I don't know why. I don't know if it's some sort of like, you know, it's part of the cleansing that like I'm, you know, I'm cleansing all this stuff. So I think of water as an association with that, or ocean being like this ebb and flow, you know, I don't really know where that comes from, but yeah, I don't feel like at any point during this awakening I have ever sort of gone back, you know. I had my first awakening was in 2017, and I got really scared by it. You know, it was so intense, and the energy that was coming in, it was almost like I felt like I was going to have a heart attack. Like, I had so much anxiety. Like, I had a lot of fear that, like, I just couldn't work through. And I was dating somebody at the time, and he was like, you know, this is crazy. Like, this is, like, evil. You know, there's, like, this is demonic, or this, you know, he psyched me out of it almost. And I kind of walked away from it, you know, and I just, like, wouldn't meditate anymore or whatever. And the next 4 years were horrendous. Like, I almost lost, like, literally almost lost everything. It was insane, the things that happened in these next 4 years. So when this came back, you know, when I started channeling again, and, you know, I was having sort of like angel contact and everything, there was no way I was walking away from it this time, because I knew I could. You know what I mean? Like, I knew it wasn't anything bad. Like, I knew it was like I could stop it if I wanted to. So I was much more open to the process this time, and, you know, kind of gave in. So I surrendered, basically, just completely to the process. So I didn't really have I didn't go backwards at all in this time around. But again, you know, you keep having to, like, revisit issues at the same time. And not so much as like a backward movement, but you reach new levels of spiritual development or intellectual development or whatever. And it's like whenever you reach like a new peak, it's almost like the guides bring these issues back to you, like your core really hard issues, like they'll bring them back to you to see how you handle them this time, or for you to see how you handle it this time, you know, knowing what you know and seeing the growth within yourself. So it is a constant, you know, sort of revisiting of these issues, but not in a backsliding kind of way, I don't feel like. I feel like it's like new levels of understanding of the pain, right, or the trauma that you went through.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Wow, that was amazing. I really liked the surrealism of this, the idea of how it has such a dreamlike quality, and, you know, the lines, do the motions and the emotions emote extreme, seems we fail as we flail in the stream of consciousness, necessities of creative courage. And that those lines really speak well on how you were mentioning the idea of surrendering in order to grow as a person rather than fighting the process. Now, this poem makes me think about dreams, and I would like to know if you, some people, you know, they have dreams, or they say we all have dreams, but some people remember them better. Now, your dreams, did they change as you changed because of these spiritual awakenings that you were having?
Do you mean like my like literal dreams at night, or like,
yes,
my goals?
Yes, yes. I did mean your literal dreams. Yes, sorry.
Yeah, I don't remember my dreams a lot. But I always had like my one theme of dreams when I was, you know, my whole life. And it was always in a house. I was always in my house or some house that I've lived in, because I've lived in like so many houses my whole life. Like, we've always moved. And like, someone would be like trying to get me in the house, right? And it would be in all different ways, but it would always be some kind of like, you know, this fear and somebody trying to get to me. But I would always escape, you know, it's like no one ever actually got me. And when I bought this house, this is my first house I ever owned, and I had the same dream here. And it was, you know, really like specific to this house. Like I could really see this, like I was here, where a lot of times it's like, oh, it's that house, but it's not really that house, you know, but this was this house. And, but then once I started this awakening process, I haven't had that dream again. And I would have like, I have dreams that I'm in, like, it's almost like I'm in school a lot. There's always some kind of like, I feel like there's some kind of like teaching going on or some kind of like I'm a student. There's a lot of dreams like that now. And then there's just like a lot of mundane dreams that like just me doing normal things, you know, that like I would be doing. My soulmate, like I had a big soulmate connection with someone who I was with for years and years and years. And it was really bad, you know, a bad situation. It was I'm still healing from that. And I dream about him a lot, actually. And I think it's like that total like letting go process and that really deep healing, like that deep soul healing. So he does pop up in my dreams, and I have no contact with him at all now. So it's weird. It's like, why am I dreaming about this person? But that's what it is. You know, it's like this, I'm purging, you know, all of this. Cause I was with him when I was a teenager and stuff too. So it's like ancient, he hurts, you know, that formed a lot of my life. So.
Yeah. Some of that, like you said, a lot of times the pain is deep in the soul. It takes longer to get through that healing. So
yeah,
that's
definitely some
thoughts shared. Yeah. And what do you got for us next, Victoria?
All right. Up next, I have grasping at air.
Air. Fall, longing, free fall, falling. Reach out to grab on walls that were now invisible. Accelerated descent, prescience at the actual speed of darkness. Hand grasps shadows of solids, once real, slippery. Traction burn scars, open eyes. See? Somehow, float. End poem.
Wonderful read and write. This is a great brevity. And I like how you use the flow of the lines, the moving back and forth of the sentences and the words to represent the falling that you see in the artwork. So just amazing imagery with hands grasp shadows of solids, once real, slippery, traction, burn, scars, open eyes, see. And again, great wordplay with the I being the self, the trying to see yourself within this fall. Now earlier you had a poem where you had one of your photographs on it. And I don't know if you're a regular photographer or not, but do you like take a picture and then think, well, this would be really great to write a poem to, or do you go out looking for the picture that matches the poem that you've already written?
Yeah, I definitely go out and look for the poem. I mean, look for the picture for the poem. I think I've done like a couple contests with picture prompts. I love art. I love images. I have like taken some pictures like on my phone and everything, but I don't have like a regular camera, which I would love to have, because I think I would really get into that. Which is weird because, you know, I love images so much, but yet when I write poetry, I'm not trying to create a picture. You know, it's much more about sound for me, you know, so it's just weird how I do like art, but I don't try to create that when I write. So yeah, so I just go look for the picture after.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I like that. man, I lost my train of thought. It just got completely derailed. I hate when that happens.
That's okay. I'll pick it up. What I really liked about this one is that it actually reminds me of the story of Icarus, but instead of him plunging to Earth, there's kind of that ability to find the ability to float. It's not about flying so high that you touch the sun. It's also not about staying on the ground. It's that beautiful balance of in between where you are just there and present. And it really got me thinking, you know, Pam and I are not so creative when it comes to our pen names. We just use our names. So a lot of your journey has been about that we see has had like these ties to these ancient thoughts, perhaps a little criticism, not even perhaps, some criticism of the modern approach to life and connecting. Can you talk about how you came to your pen name?
Yeah, some of my early downloads that I was getting in my awakening was like this idea of like healing energy, right? That I sort of have that ability. That's one of my gifts, is that I can, I don't even do anything necessarily. It's like I just can be in a room and I can change the energy of that room without knowing it or without trying or with, you know. It's almost like I'm a mirror for people a lot of times, you know. A lot of people, and it's funny because a lot of people around me have awakenings too. So it's kind of bizarre how like it's happening, you know. But I think that was sort of like one of my early messages, right? That this is one of your purposes in this incarnation, right? Is to heal your own energy, right? Heal your own self. And like through that healing, you'll heal, you know, you'll help other people to be able to like heal themselves. So that's what kind of made me think of, you know, alchemy, right? It's like changing one thing into another thing that's better, that's more valuable. So yeah, that's where that comes from.
Very cool. I am so glad you thought of asking that question, Victoria, because honestly, it was on my list. I have two different lists. I have the list in my head, and then I have actually a list written down. And I didn't get it written down, but yesterday afternoon, when I was reading through Alchemist's poetry, that was one of the questions. I was like, you know, I want to know how she came up with her all poetry moniker. So I'm glad you asked that. And
thank you, Alchemist, for sharing that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. And
all right,
what
so
do you
up
got
next,
to listen
to? I have Prima's Solo Battle. Go ahead and take that when you're ready.
Longing, languishing in the lull, dull. Dim candle flame, Schubert serenade, dancer dazed, afraid, caught in a gossamer gaze, drowsily dream, illuminating screen, a singular spot of pure white, fragile mind's eye, suffering dove fly, elegant fight, shadow boxing, an abstract ballet, basking in the repetitious rhythm, aching to know answers required to remain mysteries, histories held onto for too long, swan song, arabesque, plié, grand jeté, jab, adagio, left, right, left, compound steps, deceive, bob, weave, uppercut, duck, comber, collide with dyers, destined to die, revived and kept alive by a pretty pugilist who would rather glissade through hell than acknowledge the ringing of the final bell. End poem.
Amazing read and write. Powerful imagery. I like how, to me, this speaks on the idea of how we fear death, how we fight and refuse to acknowledge that death is a part of life. I really like the sense of movement in this, the fighting, jab, adiago, left, right, left, compound steps, deceive, bob, weave, uppercut. And who would rather glissade through hell than acknowledge the ringing of the final bell? I think the way that you stagger your lines, you know, like you write in rhyme most of the time, but the way you stagger your line distracts from that in such a way that oftentimes I'll get through one of your poems and go back and realize it was a rhyming poem. Which I think is a beautiful thing, because you never have that forced rhyme. And so absolutely stunning. And Victoria, your thoughts?
See, I took this, again, the more, not so much like fighting against death, but the history that Alchemist has shared with us, that really visceral, almost violent, matriarchal family that she's come from, where on one hand, she's fighting for the sake of fighting, not knowing what it's for, but yet on the other hand, there's that desire to be just kind and gentle. And I see the reemergence of the dove in this. And so you think of boxing, which is much like dancing, and ballet, which she's brought together. And those two don't seem to go hand in hand, and yet they do. They're a balance. They're both about a performance of some kind. And so my question on this one is this, would you say, is an expression, again, of that journey from almost this fighter to finding the beautiful balance between what is really a fighter and what is more like a ballerina? Or was there a deeper thought process in this? Not that that other thought process isn't deep, but is there another meaning that we're missing?
Yeah, I think it's about that idea that the like ballerina and the boxer are both equally elegant and beautiful and tough, and you know, so it's like the two sides are equal, you know, that they're both equally valuable, and they work together, right? That if you look at a boxing match, you know, it can look like dancing, you know, it does kind of look like, and if you look at, you know, dance, a lot of times it really looks like a battle, you know, both of these sides can be brought out at all time. Another element that was in with this one was, you know, during, again, with this, you know, twin flame journey, that I've been on, the separations are, you know, brutal, and but that's when you learn the most, you know, it's when you take, it takes you to the depths of your despair. And this idea of the, like, you would do anything, like, not to have to go through it again, you know, it's like, God, not again, like, not, we're going into separation again, like, you know, and it's not even so much the separation from the person, you know, at this point that bothers you. It's more just like, I know that the towers are going to fall, you know, like, I know that something new is going to come up. I know I'm going to go through this, you know, really deep cleansing period. And it's like, you know, you would just do anything to like ignore this, to not have to go through it. So that was kind of on my mind at the same time when I did this one.
I like that. Very cool thoughts shared. And all right, what do we got next?
Up next, we have We're All Mad Here.
Okay, so this one, this was my first collaboration with Wild. I don't know if you ladies are familiar with Wild, but he is awesome. He's my partner. We've written a few poems together. So, like, some of this is me and some of this is him. We wrote this together. Luminosities loom, not knowing no way to stay separated within a captured lens. Modern day Arachne spins silken threads across metaphysical seas. Glooming grits scarred, scratched glass, pupating in delivery, shafts, lights to eye, mine, another, blended beef medallions, tessellations, bask. Honey drips from unmoved lips, combing and combining, gilding, guiding, designing, desired sights unseen. You see me, seeing you, see me. Mirror ball, mirror kills, mirror calls. Sea billow pillows, waves on forlorn shores ashore, thrown overboard, treading treacherous depths. Each breath exhaling, inhaling tides cannot tell the story of all the seas, nor oceans behind the breaches fought and sort, despite even an odd reprieve of raw and sign melliferous cannibalistic bees, stinging invisible widows perched precariously on open-aired peaks, drowning in the droning, finally freeing all the moaning, silenced in the monotonous maelstrom of broken seabird shrieking beaks. So I become succumbed, drugged, wrought, and wrung, bells curdle eyes to the spin of an all self-consuming Cheshire grin. Imagination is the only weapon in the war with reality. In 5D, desiccated deserts drowning, saturated in waves of mystic poetry, shriveled, dried, and shrunken to atomize Mason's basins, quarks et al., truth of mysticism lies. Bowls of eyes spill from the mouths with potpourri of po-puri, to be or not, knowing nothing matters nevermore, and balanced, ripped from the core, spewed across the ocean floor, frenzied, festering, open sores, succinctly, we're all mad here. Lunatics shiver their lobotomies, empty belly of the moon howls, only echoes of a Glock therapy, a frock dressed up as a shock mender, each vault of realities in a vault returned to sender and render, melted mounds of mind-bending experiences, bubble and spit lit under fire, dire desire to undo the mire made and gave, trying to save spirit self given away. End poem.
Wonderful read and write. This is a great collaboration where things just kind of seem to flow effortlessly. A real smooth, kind of seamless in a way. I love the imagery all the way through, the nod to Lewis Carroll with the quote, "We're all mad here." And it has that Lewis Carroll type style, that ridiculous and yet makes a point at the same time. It's quite the ride through the imagery. It's definitely a down the rabbit hole right. And I like that, and I appreciate that very much. And let's see here. Have I ran out of questions to ask? Okay, inspiration. So you mentioned music inspires you. You mentioned, you know, that art inspires you. What are some other, what else inspires you to express your creativity?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I don't really know why I do this. You know, honestly, it's just like something I have to do. You know, I don't even know that I necessarily want to be doing it all the time. It's just like, it's a compulsion to do this at this point, you know? And like I said earlier, it's sort of my poetic sensibilities, whatever they are, you know, have sort of taken over my mind so much that even like when I try to sit down and write a narrative, it's like I can't, you know, like the way that my mind works now, the way that my, you know, rhythm is now almost is this, you know. And I love the fact that you say, you know, this is so like going down the rabbit hole. And it is, And I think that Wilde and I, when we write together, it's like that all the time. And it's a really cool experience because we don't know each other. You know, I mean, you know, he lives in South Africa. I live in the U.S. We, you know, we don't ever discuss what we're going to write about. He might, you know, start it. And then, you know, I'll add to it. And, like, we just kind of go back and forth. And it's completely effortless. You know, it's just seamless. It just, nobody ever changes anything, really. It's, like, no one questions anything. Like, it's just, he fully accepts whatever I give. And, you know, I fully accept whatever he gives. And it's a really cool experience. And, you know, I'm so, you know, fortunate to be working with him. And it's changed me a lot, you know, it's almost like, I feel like he's kind of like given me, like, I hate to say like permission because that's not what I mean, but it's almost like, I feel like I'm more myself, you know, like he kind of like set that free in me to go down that rabbit hole, you know, like that's okay. And, I think that if you look at my individual poetry, since I first collaborated with him, you'll see the change in it. I mean, I see a drastic change in it. And I just feel like his energy sort of set my energy free that way. And it is a wild ride. That's a really good way to say it.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Absolutely wonderful thoughts shared. And Victoria, your thoughts?
So Pam really hit on something that I found just marvelous about a lot of your different works, is that you do have this inspiration from nature, and we see the inspiration of your journey. And there is the inspiration of even you know, society and this satire almost commentary on society, how it is, how it was, how it could be. But there is also those beautiful interweavings that you've managed in each piece to kind of pull in lore and pull in stories and use it almost as a reality check. Do you find that some of your poetry is more heavily influenced by, because I know that typically you're not influenced by other poets because this is for your own therapy, but do you find that some pieces have this, like this one, we're all not here, kind of thought, and it spins with it? Or is that something that just naturally came to the piece?
Can you just say that last part again? My phone was going out. I'm sorry.
No worries. So when you have a piece like this that pulls in Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, we're all mad here, is that something that came naturally to the poem, or is that something that's kind of premeditated in the writing style?
Yeah, there's like never anything premeditated. You know, that's like the one thing, like everything that I write on my own and everything that Wilde and I write together is in the moment, you know. And he wrote the line of the succumb, drug, wrought and rung, bells curdle eyes to the spin of an all self-consuming Cheshire grin. And so the Cheshire, that made me think of the cat. So I came back with, we're all mad here. Just, you know, cause that was just a quote from Alice in Wonderland. And, then we kind of, you know, it was just very organic. Like, we didn't talk about it. We didn't, like I said, we never discuss anything, which is really, really cool. A way to write poetry together, because there's no, it's just instinct. Like, it's just a ping pong game almost, you know what I mean? So I just threw that in there. I thought of the quote, imagination is the only weapon in the war with reality. And then that kind of brought me into the Alice in Wonderland thing, which we've talked about, we've done in other poems together. We did one called Less Taught and Afraid. And I mention the song, White Rabbit. Is it White Rabbit? By Jefferson Airplane, where she talks about the taking the pill to make you 10 feet tall. So we reference that a lot now. But again, it's unconscious. Like, it just kind of comes out.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for sharing that. I mean, you do it in such a way that it really does breathe naturally. So, bravo.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I know that we are past, but we only have one form left. So are you okay if I post that one, Pam?
Absolutely. Go for it.
All right. This is entirely inflamed. Go ahead, Alchemist.
All right. This is another wild collaboration. This is our latest one. Beaten rare, foot in mouth, toes within rows, row crunching, raunch, rubbles, rumbles, rubble upwards, sandpiper, paper dyes, pulse, pulsating, sating, stains, indelibly lipped on tongues, lips, slip, zip lines, feathered in meanders of skin tight origami drums, simpering simpatico alignments, voodooed rhythmic clinics, chaotic, cyanotic, dew drips, drops in the udders of open mouth teats, amputated, in defeat, beats rising, pulse pings, sponging sutures, stutter coming again in roaring rains of empathetic, ephemera, everlasting, emphatically aglow. Feather dancer wiggles exposed in throes of dimly lit shows, ethos, pathos, lobigos, ill-loomed, ogical toggles, tugging, tagging, tactical stammering, strummed in timed hummed hymns, hymens offered as blood sacrifice to the gods of creation. Pulsating, sensating, illuminating, dominating domains of refrain and chorus, choked by the rebel sigh, bored with the norm, volley returned to the storm. Lobo looming, sticks, blocks full, butt stocks fired in the pyre's reddit air flares. Lupus integrates lunette along razor's edge of separated line, jagged spill. Splashing spills until the last post bugles shrieking in full fanciful flights, alight entirely in fond and poem.
Great read and amazing lines. Another wonderful collaboration. As you say, it has a very organic feel to it. I like the sense of movement in this, rude, rhythmic, clinics, chaotic, synodic, all the way through. And in many of your poetry, there's this sense of dance and movement that I really appreciate, which, you know, makes me think of the quote, dance like no one's watching. And I would like to know, and as my closing question, what is one of your favorite quotes, or what is a quote that you feel represents you?
You got me on that one. I don't know. I can't think of one now.
Well, that's
all
right.
We're all mad here. I'm going to use that one.
There you go.
That's a quote.
That is a good one. That is a good one. And Victoria, your thoughts?
I think that this was just a fantastic write. There is this binding feeling to it. And yet, like you kind of mentioned, Pam, there's also this fluidity, this movement. And it really does remind me of kind of that flickering of the flame, the way that you can have those two flames there kind of just matching each other's movement and yet not. And so to me, this really reads as people who are inflamed with each other, that twin flame. And I thought it was just magnificent. What would you say, as your journey has progressed, have you noticed the changes in your poetry? Have you felt that there's been a change in your writing style? Or do you feel that you're being drawn more to people like Wild, who seem to just naturally mimic your writing style? Can you tell us about that journey?
Yeah, I think that definitely, you know, you're finding my soul tribe. Like, I think I'm like getting to that point now where you know, especially being such like a lone wolf, you know, type of personality anyway, you know, finding like-minded people to collaborate with is an important part of like my mission. You know, it's an important part of like the rest of my life. And I think my writing style has changed dramatically in that I really have a lot more confidence in terms of just being different, you know, like not worrying about, oh, is anyone going to understand it or is anyone going to like it or, you know, and that terrible, like, that, you know, like at the bottom when you write your poem and it tells you about like all the cliches you use and the, you know, weak words and it you know, gives you a numbered rating. I forget what the auto rank, is that what it's called? My poems are like terrible, you know, they always come up like so low on all of that, but it's, you know, it's not caring about that, you know, it's not about, you know, having a front page pick. I mean, it's nice when it happens, you know, it's nice when you win a contest, but it's not about that. It's about really just being authentic to yourself, and the people who read you get you, you know, I mean, like, that's it, you know? So no matter what you put out there, people will take something away from it that they will enjoy or that they will, you know, that will move them or whatever. Yeah, but I do feel like I'm just getting a lot freer and more confident in my writing now.
Very cool. Very cool. I like that. And I like how you discussed the idea of, you know, allowing yourself to have that freedom in your writing. So great discussion. I have to say this has been a wonderful show. Victoria, I'm so glad you co-hosted with me. Alchemist, congratulations on being headlined. Thank you for being here. And so openly sharing so much of yourself. And is there anything that you would like to say in closing before we end the show?
No, I just want to thank you so much for having me. This was an incredible honor to be asked to be on here. And it was a lovely discussion with you ladies. And I really appreciate your openness and all of the seeing eyes that you had while reading my poetry. It really touched me, a lot of the comments that you made, and makes me want to keep going, definitely. So thank you so much.
Wonderful. I'm glad to hear that. And Victoria, was there anything you wanted to say in closing?
Absolutely. I am just so thankful, as always, to be here, hang out with you, Pam. Alchemist, genuinely, thank you for sharing your work, for sharing your journey, for just exposing yourself. It is great poets like you that make these shows fantastic. Your willingness to just kind of bear it all. And so I want to recognize and appreciate the vulnerability, the honesty that you came to this show and really letting us dig into your works and your thoughts. This is part of what makes the community great, and I truly appreciate you both.
Thank you so much.
Well said there. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.